my good friend Andy Kurtz and I decided to do a design podcast. Like most design podcasts you may hear, we will cover a wide array of design topics. We will speak about branding, packaging, marketing, and brand loyalty. What makes it unique is that it comes from our perspective as small boutique design owners dealing with the ins and outs of the everyday work environment. We are hands-on from start to finish with all of our clients, have well-rounded appreciation of all aspects that may go into a brand, and to let you in on a little secret, we really love what we fucking do. Kirk Faisola is the founder and creative director of Mind the Font, a full-service CPG branding and packaging design agency. And Andy Kurtz is the founder and creative director of Buttermilk Creative, an agency that focuses on packaging and branding design for the specialty food and beverage space. Together, we are Kirk and Kurtz, and this is the Kirk and Kurtz Design Podcast. Kirk and Kurtz number 46, the Garling House that Jenna built.
It's not that you're saying too many words, it's just the thing I do to help. But right. Are you ready, Andy?
I'm ready.
Okay. I'm Kirk Faisola. I'm the founder and creative director of Mind the Font, and I'm here with my good friend,
Andy Kurtz, founder and creative director of Buttermilk Creative.
And this is the Kirk and Kurtz Design Podcast. Pew, pew, pew.
Boom, boom, boom.
All right. So today's guest really hates us because she continually rescheduled and was canceling and rescheduling.
We finally just cut the calendar link off, and we were
told her you either come on now or you're not going to come on at all. And no, I'm kidding. Today is our guest, Jenna Garlinghouse of Here For Studio. She's the co-founder and director of client services for them, and she has this long, extensive list of being an account director and just an overall badass. And so I'm so happy to finally rein in Miss Jenna.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming on, Jenna. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm so good. It's so nice to like finally be hanging out with you
too. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like the phrase like ships passing in the night. It was
yes.
As we saw
for like the past 6 months.
Yeah. As we saw the calendar being shuffled and shifted. So it's quite all right.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome. And I'm very jealous that you're in Honolulu. So
yeah.
Aloha. It is just like the best here. I think you gotta make the move. Come visit, Ali.
Okay.
I will. I'm gonna hold you up to it. I'm
gonna
come.
Yeah, we're gonna take you up on that.
I'm just gonna knock on your door.
Next podcast here.
Oh, live and in person.
Yes. See? Live and
you
in
say
person.
That.
Let's go. Let's go.
I'm down. We're gonna make it happen.
Knock, knock, knock.
All right. So Jenna, I want to talk to you also about all the stuff you've done for Here For. Andy and I were on a podcast with Jesse Freitag of Startup CPG Podcast, and we were talking about Awesome Sauce, one of the brands that you worked on. And it's so cool. Like, it's all coming full circle. Just all of a sudden I'm looking at the site and I see that. It's like, what the hell? So we're going to talk about the agency, but I really want to know, first of all, your origin story. Like, how did you get into client services?
Yeah, good question. Well, started many years ago in college. I started off as, well, you had mentioned I started off at Kroenke Sports Enterprises as an intern, which is just part of like entertainment industry for the Colorado Avalanche. I grew up in Boulder, Colorado.
Nice.
So that was like my first internship in college, was really fun, had a great time just like working with a team, very lively environment. And then my first kind of agency experience was at Sterling Rice Group in Boulder, and they're amazing and fabulous and such great people to work for. I started off on the advertising side, in account management, and loved the creativity of advertising, and then kind of progressed, dabbled in PR for a little bit, and in San Francisco landed at Hatch Design, and really felt like from a creative standpoint, being at a design studio was like finding my niche. I absolutely loved landing in branding and packaging design, because for me, I had experienced like PR and advertising and creating campaigns and seeing those come to life. But what I loved about branding and packaging was that it really set the system for the company for the long haul. And if you do branding and packaging design really well, the idea isn't to just change it within 6 months or a year or even 3 years. The idea is to continue to evolve it. So I love working with like smaller teams to really establish that visual language and create something that felt like it brought the ethos of why that company exists to life visually. So it's like creating a personality for the company or the product or the business. And that just felt like I loved being part of that kind of like nature of the creative field.
That's great.
I love that.
Yeah, that's
Kirk, it reminds me of our good friend Luke, who said, what was it?
He said
a brand, you tell it.
a well-designed brand isn't as important as a well-delivered one.
Yes.
So a well-delivered brand mentions all the aspects you just said, and it continues to evolve. I love that because you can make something look pretty, but if it doesn't jibe with what you're doing or the people who are around you or your possible clients or consumers, then it doesn't matter. It's going to go away. And after he said that to me, it made me really think about how I approach design or how I look at a design. Like, oh, that looks like shit. Well, does it, or is it just not fitting your own design aesthetic? And I think that the advantage that you have, which is very important to me, is that you see this from not only the analytical organizational side, but also from the aesthetic side. So you were able to see both parts you built in.
Yeah, that's unique.
That's so unique.
And I think like today in like with the brands that we all work so closely with, it's like beautiful branding is almost like the ante. And obviously you can't be like all things to all people, but it's like a beautiful brand that looks like really compelling and interesting is easy to create, but a beautiful brand that delivers on why this product exists and why it's different and like emotionally connecting with its consumers is what starts to like create that relationship with the brand.
Absolutely.
I have a quick question. So we've interviewed another more business-minded creative business owner. His name's Chad Sheik. He's actually just right near me. And he has great aesthetic eye. He can spot things. He can creative direct things. Do you think that to be a really effective account executive for our client services director for a creative company, design company, agency, do you think that's essential, or can you just be straight like, no, I'm business minded. I just look at spreadsheets. I know the numbers. What do you think that that's essential?
That's a good question. I feel like for me, I'm lucky because I'm super intrigued and love the design aspect of it.
Yeah.
So
you're curious.
Yeah. Like, I think I love putting on like my client hat and looking at the creative from that perspective, but also not only just our client, like we like to remind our clients, like you might not be the target audience. Like, let's put on our hat of who our target audience is and make sure, because like, yes, we want our clients to love the brand. It's their brand. But if they're not the target, then constantly like bringing them back and being like this, you are not her per se. So, that's important. And then like, we always talk about how when we started here for like my idea of what good, cool design is has shifted. So I think like, I've been so fully immersed in like building here for with Ryan and Corey that I have just like really expanded my knowledge of like what cool brands are out there, what brands are doing, like how design trends are shifting. And I think like I'm more open to like cool category breaking, super like pushing it creative these days versus what I would have been into or open to previously. So I feel like it just is a constant evolution. And I think in order to be like an amazing account executive or account director in this space, like having a love and a passion for design is kind of like a baseline of what you need.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I really hear you on the telling your client that you may not be their consumer that they're looking for.
That's a big revelation.
That is a lot of folks. Oh my God, that's a hard revelation, because a lot of times clients are so attached to their baby, right? Their little their startup baby. And then you don't like telling your client that your baby is ugly, but you also want to be able to be honest with them and like really focus on who the consumer is. Like exactly what I said earlier, I may not like something that they did, but it's not about me and my personal preference on aesthetic. It's about what the brand's trying to deliver on. And I'm really intrigued by that whole aspect. And one of the things that we always ask about is, what brand do you think is doing a good job at being the overall player in that headspace, like for their brand, like who does it really well as far as branding goes?
Oh my gosh, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. Sorry, just clicked into my head. Well, there are so many amazing brands out there these days that are doing really fun category breaking work. I think like I'm a big fan of what Gander Design Studio ends up putting out into the world. Like I had just been asked to kind of share my like favorite redesigns from 2022. And I loved what they did with Graza, the olive oil. I think that was like totally category breaking in terms of like shifting olive oil from like glass to a plastic bottle that felt squeezable and like really approachable and has a super strong brand color. And it doesn't feel like the olive oil category in and of itself was like source stories more so than like brand personality stories. So like this olive oil is from California, this olive oil is from Spain, but Graza kind of like turned that on its head and is like, this is an olive oil made for home cooks for like two very different like olive oil occasions that every consumer can like immediately relate to, either like drizzling on salads or like cooking, sizzling. So I loved what they did with that brand. And then Couplet was like a super fun brand from 2022. They kind of like just went all in on their brand personality. It's a coffee bean company. And I just like love the design system, and it's all about taking like craft coffee and making it approachable and for everyone. Like there's like a little bit of like a highbrow aesthetic per se. And I think Couplet does an amazing job at like really just like being themselves as a brand. Like it's founded by like two LGBTQ, I think, founders, and they're just like going all in on like building the brand personality.
Which is refreshing for the coffee category. I mean, Stumptown, at one point, you know, sort of moved that needle from Starbucks, but like this is so funky. I wasn't aware of that. I need to check it out. I love it.
What is the name of it?
That's so cool. Couplet.
Couplet.
You just Google Couplet Coffee.
Okay.
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, so Jenna, I wanted to pick your brain about, I feel like it's so interesting, in the past, honestly, since the pandemic, it seems like brands have just exploded. New brands, startup brands.
Yes.
You know, you've got like Liquid Death breaking the mold everywhere. Yeah. You've got all the stuff that Herefor has designed breaking the mold. What is this? I'm just so curious about, because I come from a very traditional, I worked at a grocery store in-house And it was a specialty food grocery store. So it was like, you know, it had cool stuff, but it still was, you know, it still was retail.
Yeah.
I designed private label for them.
Oh, cool.
So we had to adhere to the category. We had to look at what was established and sort of break the mold a little bit, but we couldn't break it too much.
Right.
And that's sort of my ethos. That's what I try to do with our clients. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the work that you do and other studios that do for mainly startup brands, it's just like, it blows my mind from a category perspective, from everything. How do you guys approach this, and how do you take on that risk? Because when I do something, I'm like, okay, let's see, what are the sort of consistencies of the category? Let's adhere to those, and then let's see where those opportunities are that we can break and differentiate. But we're still going to look pretty much like a baking mix, a coffee roaster, a whatever. But in the work that you do, it's sort of like, no, fuck that. We're going to do whatever we want. And the customers are going to like it because it's so radical. But yeah. That risk is very scary for me, because I can't imagine pitching an idea like that to a client. How do you guys approach that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think it like starts with finding the right client partners that have a similar vision. And I think when we have like new business meetings and calls with potential clients, like we always say, the goal of Here For is to do two things. We like to make nice things for nice people nicely. And then we love to introduce new and good ideas into the world. New and good. So like, we really want to like take a stand in revolutionizing a category that might feel outdated and offer the consumer something that's a lot better or elevated for X, Y, and Z reason, and bring that to the masses eventually. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that idea really stems from like the initial conversation with clients, and then every step of the way, reminding them of what it is that we're trying to do and kind of reiterating to clients, like, we can't be all things to all people. And if we want to win at something, we have to be really clear about how we're different, because I used to know this stat in my mind, but there's like so many new brands that are introduced every single year, and
millions.
a big chunk of those don't end up making it. So for us, it's like, if you're going to do this, you might as well go big. And let's try something really different that speaks to who you are and resonates with our target audience in a way that feels inspiring to them and keeps them coming back for more.
Yeah. I love that.
I think it's important to reiterate that there are a lot of brands out there that get introduced and don't make it. And I also said I made a pact with myself to not work with assholes. So I like the fact we work with nice,
we make nice things for nice people nicely.
I can't remember. I can't remember read my own writing, but that was the thing too. I'm not going to work with assholes. And I told someone this, I think it might even been, was it Jesse or someone else, that I want to be able to work with someone that I like or that are good people, because the design is heavily influenced by it, just in my psyche. Yes. If I'm not liking something or the person that I'm working with, I just feel like, okay, I just need to get this done, rather than what is the best possible solution. And it's shitty,
it's
because
a mindset.
It doesn't reflect well on you as a designer, and it doesn't reflect well on them as a brand even, because that's ultimately a reflection of what you did. And to have that conversation up front to see how people are is definitely important, super important.
Yeah.
And I think that's a major component. What are you gonna say, Jenna?
Yes. It's just like, brand building is such a like intimate relationship for like a few solid months of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think for us, like, holding ourselves to that standard both internally and externally with our clients, like aids in creating really good work. Mm-hmm. Like I feel so lucky every day that I get to work with like my two best friends. They're literally my best friends. And so we didn't start this company to like, you know, just bring in all the clients that we can bring in and like sell the company or something in a few years. Like we started this because we love what we do and we're mm-hmm. so excited about working with really cool people to make an impact in the world. And like we're intentionally staying small as a business because like we love working with startups and we love working mm-hmm. with big guys and just being able to work across like such a range of clients and keep things interesting is really fun. So like holding ourselves to that be a nice person standard when we're talking to each other internally and with our clients feels like it's working for us.
Yeah. That's great. I treat my boss like an asshole all the time. So I should be a little nicer to him because I think he deserves it. And of course I'm talking about myself in the third person.
I think he deserves it. You need to be nicer to yourself.
Right. It's so interesting.
Kirk,
too.
We need to do a therapy session.
We do, man. We do. When my wife and I, we complain about like, oh, I need to lose weight or, oh, I'm a failure or, oh, I didn't do this right. Or, oh, I didn't do that right. We always ask, well, would you say that to me? And of course the answer is no. I'm not going to say like, oh, you're overweight or, oh, you're such a fuck up or whatever. So why would you say it to yourself? Like, why wouldn't you give that
grace? Own worst enemy.
Right.
You're your own worst enemy.
And so you get in your own head and you stuff like that. So it's nice, it's nice that y'all established that hierarchy and relationship before you got into it.
It's part of their DNA. And that's really cool because, I mean, just you bringing it up in this podcast, it shows that it is so ingrained in your culture. I mean, you came from Collins, which, or, you know, one of your stops along the way was Collins. Yeah. And I love Brian Collins. Like
he's amazing.
Yeah. I saw him speak at a conference years ago and was just like riveted. And then I got on the Collins mail list and then I started getting invited to like these like Zoom things, these Zoom readings with this poet, David White.
Andy did the usual thing of stalking people that he likes. It's perfect.
I can relate to that.
But he is so heavy on culture. Like, like the brand can look like, the brand can be so simple, designed so not basic, but like not have a lot of fluff, but if the culture is so strong and ingrained and like believed in, then anything is possible. And so that, you know, I'm not saying that, I mean, I think you arrived at that based on other parts of your experience, but I mean, that's really, that seems like that might've had a little bit of a component to your experience and your history. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's like, that just goes to show that you all live and breathe that. And it shows in your work too.
Oh,
like that when you scroll through your portfolio, it's like a smile, like you just smile when you look at it. Cause you're just like, this is so cool.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. Yeah.
It's so neat.
Thanks. Yeah. No, we were saying how a previous design studio we worked at, like their thing was like sun or sunshine. Like how can we bring sun to packaging? And like for Here For, I think it's like, how can we bring like a smile or a smiley face or just like,
you do it.
Creative that feels happy. Yeah. And I mean, to your point on Brian Collins, like what I was really inspired by and impressed about working there is like, he is so like in close touch with everyone that works there. He does create an environment where everyone can like grow and like live into the role that they're inspired to be in. And I loved that he sold Collins, but then bought Collins back. Yeah. So I feel like that just kind of like turned the agency model on its head in my mind. Like people start agencies to like sell agencies, I guess.
And
I
don't retire. Know
Yeah.
And go to Bali or something, you know?
Yeah, like, right.
Not yes. come back and get back yeah. in the nitty gritty.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And he's like so immersed in yeah. like the design scene to this day. And that's just like really fun to us. And yeah. I feel like along the lines of like what we are excited about to be doing at Year 4.
That's yeah. great. You know, I look at when I first saw the Year 4 branding, and it's just, it's basically a happy face.
Yes. It's really good.
But not really. It's like, it's a silly, yeah. it's a silly yeah. happy face.
I love it.
It's perfect.
It. Again, it makes you smile.
Yeah.
Makes
and it's, smile. It's, it goes to show, you know, what automatically came to my mind was Maximum Effort, Ryan Reynolds' company. All mm-hmm. it is a sideways, like handwritten M, but if you turn it also, it's an E. So it's like an M and an E. It's like, that's just brilliant. Yeah. But the logo itself is just shit. But it's like, it's like so contradictory. Like Maximum Effort that yeah. literally looks like someone spent 4 seconds on it. And so it's kind of the same yeah. thing with like the happy face. It's like, we're just gonna put a happy face on here. You don't like it, that's fine, but look yes. at our work. And it's like, okay,
yeah,
this is what you guys yeah. are all about. Yeah. Like we're gonna do nice things for nice people nicely. And yes. I'm gonna say it all the time now. I'm telling you right now, I'm stealing yeah. it. It's not gonna be like on my website. But it's gonna be when I talk to people. Mm-hmm. That's gonna be in the back of my head. It's yeah. gonna be so great.
Yeah.
It's not trademark, so you do what you want.
Okay. Like, you go for it. Yeah, you go for it. Exactly. No, we have not trademarked. Yeah, I guess it's freaking. No, yeah. yes.
You need to get
the
on
purpose
it.
Of that is for it to spread. We want it. To
yeah,
spread.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I want to. So okay. So we've been talking about the touchy feely, like happy. Working with startup brands, creativity, all the great things. I want to pick your brain about the potential pitfalls, or like, you know, like I'm fascinated. I see you on Startup CPG Slack a lot. You know, you're commenting on things. You're when people are like, I need a designer, you know, you get tagged, all this kind of stuff. But as we know, Startup CPG and startups in general, yeah. it's fraught with, you know, ups and downs. So what are you guys doing for that? Like, I want you to very simply, you know, boil down how you like validate clients, or because you're working with it seems like very early brands, but then also yeah. they're with you. So like, yeah, I'm just curious about that process and sort of the pitfalls of working with startups.
Yeah, definitely. No, great question. I mean, for us, I think it does come back to like, how well does that first conversation go with clients? Mm. And then yeah. how serious are they about building their brand? Because to your point earlier, like the work that we put into it is ultimately at the hands of our client to bring it to life. So like, yeah. Yeah. I think we've come to the point where we're like interviewing clients just as much as clients are interviewing us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think like valuing our work via like sticking to timelines that make sense and like meeting us budget wise, because like they're that invested enough to make it happen, really does like start to like bring the right client partners and collaborators to us. And then it's also coming down to like, what is their product that they're introducing into the world? And do we truly believe in it? And if we do, like, are we super stoked to like spend the next few months of our lives like building a whole brand world around it so that
yeah.
we're setting
yeah.
them up for success for launch? So it's like such a multitude of things, but like how like partnery does the client feel?
Yeah.
Like, do we want to get on the phone and Zoom with them for the next few months? And like, what's the product? Like, does timing align? And I think for me personally, like I am of the mindset of like, I can always make anything work.
So, right.
That's a good client services person.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah. we're going to find a way. But I think like an evolution or like something I'm trying to work on is like gracefully letting opportunities go that aren't right, knowing like a better opportunity is like around the corner.
Yeah.
So I think that's the,
It's very tough.
Challenge.
Throwing, I mean, you're not throwing away money in essence, but you're doing it. And the one thing to go right along with that, that I'm realizing is I'm going with my gut from now on. Every time I feel that something isn't right, I just say no, no matter how good it sounds, no matter how good it looks.
Yeah.
Like if it doesn't feel right, I'm going to say no, because more than likely when you start getting into it, it's fucked up because you get, you're like, oh, this person really sucks, or they really don't listen, or they don't pay, or whatever it is. And you're sitting there thinking to yourself, why didn't I just listen to my own intuition in regards to not taking on this client? So I love hearing that you're having a hard, you have a hard time doing that as well. But in the long run, in the long run, it's better for your company. It's better for your mentals too. And you know, people who don't have the luxury of quitting their 9-to-5 corporate day job, it's really difficult to keep going in and doing that and being stuck in a place where it's bad company culture or whatever. And the the three of us luckily escaped that, whether it was good or not, and started our own things. But at the same time, you don't want to invite that aspect of the company culture, that terrible corporate culture of
that you escaped.
Yes.
Into
right.
Your, into your you know, your fortress of solitude.
Right. So you have a we have a tendency to read it a little bit quicker. It's just a matter of listening to the intuition.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Like I just saw a meme or something where it was like, red flags don't go away. They just get bigger almost. So it's like if this is a red flag when we're like all should have rose colored glasses on about the opportunity of working together and like building something amazing, like what will the red flags be when we're like having those harder conversations about making design decisions? Listen to your gut. Anything.
Bottom line, it's about a relationship, right? So it's a relationship with a client. It's a relationship with someone you may be dating or someone you may be getting into business with or whatever. It's like, or a friendship even. Yeah. It's like, if there's red flags already and things are coming up, it's best to just kind of wash your hands of it and walk away. And that's the hard part, especially being your own boutique owner, is walking away from money is always hard. But
definitely. Yeah. And I think just like standing your ground in terms of like your standards too.
Yeah.
And I think like another thing, so we could talk for hours. Another thing is like, saying no is okay. And then like seeing how the potential client reacts and like gauging how motivated they are to work with you via that, like saying no, like I can't do that is like a full sentence.
Yeah. That's...
I don't know if you all went through any of the like Win Without Pitching, Blair Inns training with like value-based pricing. But what you're describing, it, the designer is, or the agency, the creative provider, the solutions provider is the prize. We are what you don't, you need us more than we need you. We can go out and find clients anywhere. Like, you know, we can hustle and find clients, but you can't find us anywhere. And so that's really when you go into a client meeting or a proposal presentation with that. And they call it the Jedi mindset, which I love. And I remind myself every time I present a proposal, it really empowers you to be like, I've recently had to tell a client, I don't need you. If you're going to give me this flack, I don't need this. I can go find another client. I don't need, and it turned the whole thing around. And as Kirk knows, I'm a Southern gentleman. I don't like confrontation.
No, he doesn't.
Yes.
I will skirt confrontation. And so you really have to push me really far.
Yeah.
Unless you're my family, you really have to push me really far to get that, you know, bring that conflict in. But But it is true. Like you have to be so confident and have that mindset and come into the conversations, especially in the early phase where you're like, I'm the prize. I'm the one that they need me. I don't need them.
Right.
And that's how you present. And it's like, take it or leave it. You know, if you don't like it, oh well, you know?
Yeah. And then the crazy thing about that is when you go into those conversations with that mentality, it's like they get that feeling and you probably end up winning the business then.
Exactly.
You're not feeling all pressure-y towards them. Instead, you're like, I'm super confident in what we can deliver and know that we're going to do insane work for you. So this would be great if you chose us.
Trust us. Trust us to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pay us. Trust us, pay us to do it, and then we'll knock it out of the park.
Yeah, definitely.
I put a bid in. I was working on a possible logo job for someone who had a pizza truck, and it was just them and their husband. And it was and they didn't have a lot of money. So thinking, oh, this would be great. They're a mobile pizza truck. My family has a winery, and they do quarterly or annual like member events. So it'd be nice to have them come and just cook for the member event. And that way there's food taken care of. They sip on wine. And it's just a great time for all. So I send them a bid, and the bid was stupidly low.
Yeah.
I mean, just really low. And I said, and also for a catering event. And so I go through the entire proposal and I put together, here's what's included. Here's the phases that are going to happen. Here's what goes on round one, round two. This is how long it's going to take. Here are some examples of prior work. I went through all that process. I put the bid together to send it out to him because I was trying to be professional. And we get on the phone, and the guy's like, oh, you know, we don't need all those other services. Is there a reason why we can't just do it lower? Like, we don't need to have the mock-up, and we don't need to have this and that. We were just looking for something cheaper. And I'm thinking, and so I wrote back, thank you so much for getting back to me. I don't think this is a good fit. I'm sure you guys will be amazing. please do your best. So like, I was like, basically it was a nice way of saying fuck off. Like I'm not gonna go through that. And the other thing, going back to know with the reason, is that no is a full sentence. If someone says that's
you
it
don't have like, to explain yourself.
And it, I mean
no,
as
it's just no.
As people who are representing our client or our company, you have to have the ability to be cordial somewhat in a situation where it's like, hey, one further review. We feel this wouldn't be a good fit. Go fuck yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it's like, that's the way you really go about it. But of course it's nicer. I would never say it to anyone. I'm actually not that cynical, but okay. Yeah. So
my fave is we've run the numbers frontwards and backwards, and this is the best we can do.
Yes. Oh, that's good. That is a very diplomatic way to say it. I'm going to have to, I'll borrow that.
Take that. Take it. Yep.
That's like used car salesman. We've run numbers.
Yeah. It's just like, this is our final. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. No, we're coming up on time, and I wanted to just make sure that if you had any nuggets or any words of wisdom, or if Andy had another question, that we can get that through. And then
I do have one more question.
Please.
To follow up on my sort of, you know, the more innovative, creative brands that you all have worked on. Do you think, and I'm even looking, I have your website up, and there's this like revolving sort of flashing here for, do you think that there is a, the evolution of brand has become so decoupled from the logo? Like when you think about heritage brands like Apple, Nike, you know, there was a established logo and it was stamped everywhere. Mm-hmm. And the brands that you work on, do you find yourself sort of breaking that up and basically creating an anti-brand where it's like, I don't know, like, is the brand the culture? And it can, like, the awesome sauce could be created in any typeface or any letter form. But because of the context, it's the brand. Do you find that a lot of your brands are shifting, or are you guys trying to like shift the whole industry that way? Or, you know, like that's, I don't know. It's so weird. Ooh. Things nowadays.
No, such a good question. That's interesting to think about. I think for us, like, we don't ever pitch projects being like, we will create a logo for you. Like, mm-hmm. we pitch projects, we are going to build your brand identity system and packaging design if it's CPG. And I think what has been like a fun uncovering for our team is we love building brand worlds. So it's not like a logo, color palette, and typography. It's like how all those elements play together, and then what's their unique and ownable illustration style or icon system that isn't just like, okay, this brand is like vegan, non-GMO, dairy-free, gluten-free. Let's put the standard bugs on there. Let's like revolutionize what those icons are in like the Toodaloo way or the Joy way.
Yeah.
So it's like touching every single element visually of what makes the brand a brand, which is just every single visual touch point, and bringing that to life in its own unique way. So for us, it's less about like we're creating a logo that can be with you for forever. It's more so when we're working with startups, like we want to build a super unique and ownable brand world for you that you can kind of live into through the entirety of like your company's existence. But then on the other side of things, we work with bigger companies that do have an established logo.
Sure.
And then they're coming to us to infuse more fun and play and approachability into their system. So instead of like doing something that feels really tried and true and like traditional packaging hierarchy and treatments of things, it's like, how can we kind of like break that system for this bigger company, still use their logo, but like infuse other illustration elements or food art styling to make it feel like maybe like this big brand is even smaller than you might expect it.
Yeah. They're fresher, more innovative. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
Yep.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's so smart. That's you know, and that's why
I love that approach.
Yeah. That's why you have people like yourself on, because you're smart and you give good insight. And it's always so nice. It's always so nice to meet new friends and have new places to stay when we visit Honolulu.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Two bedrooms, knock. Come on over.
That's so good. So you can find Jenna all over the interwebs, mainly at Hereford Studios, Jenna Garlinghouse, like, oh my garling, Jenna Garlinghouse, words. And
words.
check out Hereford Studio, and they're so amazing. And I just can't thank you enough, Jenna, for coming on.
Yeah, so thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. So fun to hang out, and let's definitely do this like
once we'll keep doing it. Yeah, exactly.
Yay.
Hold on a second, okay? I'm Kirk Vaisola. I'm the founder and creative director of Mind the Font, and I'm here with my good friend,
Andy Kurtz, founder and creative director of Buttermilk Creative.
And you just listened to the Kirk and Kurtz Design Podcast with our very special guest, Ms. Jenna Garlinghouse. Thank you so much, Jenna. We'll talk to y'all next time. Peace.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay, we're done. All right. Thank you, Jenna. That was so great.
Oh my gosh, thank you guys.
That was amazing.
So fun.
Yeah.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah.
I was like nervous and stuff.
No.
It's just been a conversation.
Thank you so much for tuning in to the Kirk and Kurtz Design Podcast. A very special thanks to Jenna Garlinghouse for coming on the show. You can find out more about Jenna and Hereford Studios in the podcast description. Peace.